Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. We dive into stories of true crime, from unsolved cold cases to historic kidnapping to gangsters and beyond. We are your source for true crime. We thank you for listening.
In 2008, Nicholas Browning was 15 years old. He was described as a good boy and a hardworking student. He was the eldest of the Browning children. His father worked as a real estate lawyer for a large company. The man was a scout leader, taught in Sunday school, had a successful career behind him, and was respected and quite popular in the community. His mother was a housewife, a lovely, humble woman. Nicholas had two younger brothers who were 13 and 11. On the afternoon of February 2, 2008, Nicholas was dropped off at his friend's house by his parents, where he and his friends Taylor Tewsbury and Alexander Smith were to stay the night with Ryan. The boys were all 15 years old. Teenagers wanted to watch films and play computer games. The next morning, Nick, Taylor, and Alexander, who had spent the night in Ryan's house, were supposed to drive home. His parents had promised to pick Nicholas up in the morning, but they had not arrived on time. He tried to call them to find out what was going on, but the Brownings ignored all calls. The teenagers then decided to go to the mall with Ryan's father. After shopping, they took Nick home. On the way there, he repeatedly called his mother and father and sent them text messages, but to no avail. When they arrived at Nicholas's house, they immediately noticed the family car in the driveway, but the house was quiet. When the Browning son opened the door and entered, he immediately realized why. Before him was a horrifying sight. The entire family had been shot. His 45-year-old father, John Browning, his 40-year-old mother, Tammy, and two younger brothers, 13-year-old Gregory and 11-year-old Benjamin, were all dead. Nicholas turned to Ryan's father, who was still standing in front of the house. The man called the emergency services and told them what had happened. Police officers arrived immediately after the call. The police caught the young people in the courtyard of the house. They seemed very agitated. Nicholas, who seemed calm, immediately explained that it was a robbery that had not gone according to plan. The boy was sure that while he was staying with his friends, a burglar had broken into the house and the crime had gotten out of hand. In his opinion, his parents could have prevented him from carrying out his plan and the burglar opened fire. There were no signs of a struggle at the scene of the massacre. The police found four dead who were lying in different places. Each of them had been killed by a single shot to the head. Even a cursory inspection of the premises showed that nothing was missing from the house. The furniture was intact, most valuables were still in their place. There was no sign of forced entry or disorder. A botched robbery could therefore be ruled out. Nicholas's words and behavior were too suspicious. Despite the age of the young people and a possible state of shock, all four boys were taken to the police station where they had to undergo interrogation. The students were placed in separate rooms so they could not conspire. The police spoke to Taylor first. He immediately seemed suspicious of the police because he was very nervous. He spoke hesitantly before answering questions. Police chose him first because they thought the guy would be easy to crack. The others seemed more confident, especially Nicholas. According to Taylor, he and three of his friends had spent the night at Ryan's house. They arrived the day before the murder, shortly after school with the house owner, while Alex and Nicholas arrived a little later. The teens watched movies and played video games until Ryan's parents sent everyone to bed. During the night, he didn't hear or see anything suspicious. After that, the investigating officer, who was working with Taylor, decided to take a break and talk to Nicholas in another room. In the officer's opinion, the boy was acting suspicious. When he entered the office, the man just sat quietly with his head down as he seemed a little sleepy, which seemed odd considering his entire family, except himself, had died. The police officer acted friendly. He wanted to portray this interaction as a normal witness interview so that the student would trust him, answer truthfully, and not exercise his right to a lawyer. The police officer hoped to obtain a confession without involving a defense attorney, as this would have made work considerably more difficult. Nicholas remained composed and calm. He said that he came home from school at around 2:45 p.m. After a while, his parents decided to take him to Ryan's house. The teenagers lived less than a kilometer from each other, so they usually walked to each other's houses. This time, the Brownings decided to take him with them simply because they happened to be out and about. Nick repeated Taylor's story that the student spent the whole evening playing computer games and watching films, and then went to bed. He admitted, however, that he left his friend's house at around 1 a.m. and headed towards his parents' house. According to him, he wanted to steal the family car to go for a drive with his friends. Of course, his parents were not allowed to know about it. When he reached the house, he saw that the lights was on in his father and mother's bedroom window. At that moment, he had already gotten into the car. He lay down on the floor of the back seat so he could not be seen. Nick was worried that his action of opening the car would make noise and attract his parents' attention, but he did not want to be reprimanded by his strict father, so he held still. The teenager covered himself. Now he had to wait until the family had calmed down and everyone had gone to bed. He didn't want to steal the car in public so as to not provoke more trouble.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Nick lay in the family car for a while and just fell asleep. Probably then, the shooting started. He just didn't hear it. Woke up and drove away. The first shot was fired at close range into the head of John, the father of the family, who was sleeping on the couch downstairs. Apparently, Tammy and her two sons were not awake. They were sleeping on the first floor and were also shot in their sleep. The police believe that Nicholas was involved in the massacre. Obviously, there was something he didn't tell them. The investigators thought it was odd that he had hidden in the family car instead of returning directly to Ryan's house. He was also the only survivor of the family, so he should have been at the scene at the time of the shooting. According to Nick, he hadn't heard anything, which also didn't speak in his favor. The man's statement that the light was on also aroused suspicion because it was turned off when the police arrived at the house. Against the background of his claim of a robbery, it was unclear why burglars would turn on a light to steal and then turn it off again. Criminals usually have no time for that. The suspect had no answers to these questions. The officers then spoke to Ryan. According to the teenager, he had dozed off in the evening and woke up around midnight. According to him, Nick was no longer at home at that time. The investigators, therefore, came across a temporal discrepancy, which could also indicate that the teenagers were lying. Finally, Nick said he left his friend's house at 1 a.m. Due to this obvious discrepancy, the investigators turned to Taylor again for clarification. He stated that Nicholas was actually no longer in Ryan's house around midnight. When he was then informed about the time periods given by the other teenagers, he immediately changed his statement. He now claimed that his friend was still in the house at midnight. Taylor was visibly more nervous and did not want to tell the truth so as not to incriminate his friend. The police officer managed to calm the young man down. The student said that after Nick left, he went straight to bed. Taylor knew that his friend wanted to steal his parents' car and go for a drive, but did not indicate that he was stuck in it or even attacked the family. The investigators then spoke to Nicholas again, who presented the friend's new statement. Now the teenager began to claim that he had left his friend's house and gone home to get his car, even late at around 1 a.m. He changed his story again and said that the light in the house had been on from the start, and when he woke up, it was off, which meant that the burglars, who were already in the house when he arrived, had done it. Against this background, his attempt to hide in the car seemed absurd because he could have just driven away or waited on the side of the road until the lights went out. Nick continued to claim that he had fallen asleep in the car, but how would he not hear the shots? This time, the young man clarified that he had woken up by a call from Alex, his friend, that he had received at around 5 a.m. He did not return to his parents, but went back to his friend's house without his car. In reality, it was Alex who broke all the patterns. He reported that Nick did not leave the house that night, but when he heard about the words of the other friends, he also changed his statement. A student reported that Nicholas had left the house at 11:45 p.m., but he said that he had fallen asleep around midnight and had only opened his eyes at 5 a.m. Alex noted that Nick was not yet in his room, so he called him on his cell phone. As he admitted, his friend had to sneak into his parents' house to get the car keys. Only then could he steal it. But if the young man had the keys initially, he didn't have to sneak into the house. During the nighttime questioning, the investigators received reports from all the young people. All of them raised questions and doubts due to inconsistencies in their statements. Then a man came to the station who played a key role in solving the crime. It was Mr. Pescher, who turned out to be Ryan's stepfather who was staying overnight with his friends. The man said that the children should be picked up by their parents at 9 a.m. because the mother wanted to involve her son in cleaning the house. But no one came at the agreed time and didn't call. The children had breakfast and waited, and from about 11 a.m., Nicholas started calling and leaving messages for his family, all of which were ignored. Although the suspicion against Nicholas grew stronger and stronger, he tried to remain calm. Ryan's stepfather also said that Nick was unusually calm, wasn't worried about his parents' absence in the morning, and for some reason didn't rush home himself, even though he only had to walk 20 minutes. Instead, he went to the mall with his friend and his father. He kept waiting for his parents to respond to his calls, and only on the way back did they stop by his house. The police saw in this behavior a confirmation of their suspicions. The murderer simply didn't want to return to the crime scene and wanted to gain time. When the group came back to Nicholas's house, the friends went in through the garage. Nick even asked his friends to come into the house with him. Even though this seemed unusual, the teenager pointed out to the man and his friends that the door was open, which was strange. Nick explained to them that it was customary in their family to lock the doors. According to the friend's stepfather, Nick had emphasized this to everyone present several times before he entered. They walked through the living room with Nicholas leading the way. The first thing he saw was his father lying on the couch, covered in blood. Nick screamed. The other friends saw the body and immediately ran out so as not to go any further. The school children told Ryan's stepfather what they had seen. The man did not believe it and ran into the house himself. When he saw John's body, he immediately called the emergency services to Browning's address. Meanwhile, Nick went upstairs and found his mother and brothers also dead. During questioning, Nicholas confirmed all of this information. What shocked the police the most, however, was the calmness with which he told them all of this. It seemed as if he felt absolutely nothing, which is not fitting for a person who is mourning the loss of his family. According to Ryan, after Nick had found the entire family murdered, he went outside to the others and casually reported it. The teenagers didn't want to see any of this. He immediately announced that it was a robbery, but remained completely calm, which was surprising at first glance. The police searched the entire house in the hopes of finding clues and finding out what had happened, but found nothing. At this point, Nicholas made his way to the back of the house, to the back entrance. Here he saw his Xbox and his laptop on the pool table, so he came to the conclusion that the thieves were trying to steal these items. But something stopped them. After these words, the police finally realized that the idea of robbery was untenable. The teenager was just trying to deceive them in a clumsy way. Obviously, the burglars had taken valuable electronic devices, which were clearly visible. The police officers continued walking through the area where the massacre had taken place and questioned the residents, looking for witnesses and possible clues. Later, when he tried to justify himself, Nick admitted that the car keys had been in his jacket the whole time. He remembered them when he visited his friend, and at the moment he had hatched a plan to steal the car. The investigators did not understand why he had not told them immediately. They were sure that the young man was hiding something, and once again, lying was the deciding factor for all doubts. Also, the teenager said that Nicholas called before coming home and asked his brothers to leave the back door of the house open, but it was unclear why. After that, the investigators did not doubt that the teenager was guilty of killing the people closest to him. Nick told investigators that his father owned 2 firearms and had taken him hunting several times so that he had learned how to handle rifles and pistols. In addition, friends of the suspect said that he had several conflicts with his father, who caught him drinking alcohol. Nicholas himself believed that not far from the Browning family lived a man who was really capable of such a bloodbath. It was a neighbor named Bobby who consumed illegal substances and repeatedly got into trouble with the law. The investigators, however, thought this was just an attempt to shift the blame onto someone else and divert suspicion from himself. There was no evidence against Bobby, and he had a solid alibi. When the investigators publicly announced that Nicholas was the main suspect, the teenager became visibly nervous and protested his innocence. At this point, the forensic pathologist discovered that a 9mm pistol from the dead man's locker was missing from the house. According to the forensic pathologist, a similar weapon had ended the family's life. The investigators wanted to find out where the young man had hidden the murder weapon. The interrogation lasted about 6 hours. When the investigators asked about another question, Nick continued to insist on his innocence. The police pressed him again and again. The longer it took, the more the young man's statement changed. During the investigation, it turned out that the parents' relationship with their eldest son, Nick, was not the best. Recently, it had become even more tense. When he realized that he was being cornered, the main suspect said that his parents were very cruel people. He had been subjected to their moral and physical pressure for years. During the interrogation, Nicholas repeatedly asked the police whether he could expect compulsory treatment in a psychiatric hospital instead of a life sentence. The investigators avoided answering this question, but the boy's suspicious interest was held against Nick. He was obviously aware of his guilt and thought that there was a chance of reducing the sentence. He was still sure that the jury would believe his story, which he openly told the investigators at the end of the interrogation. The evidence against Nick was sufficient, but there was no motive. According to the suspect's friends, Nick had a fight with his father shortly before the murders. He eventually described incidents in which his father was rude to him and even physically attacked him. In the fall, the relationship had deteriorated significantly. One of the reasons for this was the situation when the boy stole the family car and was caught. The transition had a bad effect on Nick. His behavior got worse and worse, which of course the teenager's parents did not like. The father was quite strict and tried to re-educate his son. Nicholas himself claimed that according to his statement on the day he went to his friends, it always came to a critical point because his father beat him up again that morning for far-fetched reasons. The police suspected that the reason for the whipping was that the teenager did not want to obey his parents. From the statements of his friends, it emerged that the boy was in his teens and was beginning to show a rebellious spirit, which was met with natural resistance from his parents. Particularly great tensions arose with his father had caught his son drinking alcohol several times. Nick himself justified himself by saying that he was trying to get away from his problems in this way. Several of Nick's relatives confirmed these words and described his father as a rather strict man, but they also did not believe that he could just hit his son like that. In discussions with schoolmates and the suspect's immediate environment, the police found that the conditions for the massacre had been in place long before the young murderer decided to pull the trigger. However, it was unclear why he killed his mother and brothers, who had done nothing to him. His friends, who he was with on that fateful night, confirmed that they had heard Nick make several joking remarks in which he admitted that he would kill them. He said his mother was a stupid blonde, his father was an abusive drunkard, and that he hated her, but nobody took them seriously. Many schoolchildren were witnesses to his story that he could no longer bear the torment and morals of his father. Outside of school, the young man often beat his younger brothers quite violently, stole alcohol from his father's bar, and used the car, even stealing the family car without permission. And in addition, it was found that he had also allowed himself to do unnecessary things to people outside his immediate circle. In particular, he bullied young students and people with disabilities at school. As it turned out, after the massacre and after returning to his friend's house, Nicholas began to gather his friends for a party at his house in the afternoon. It was to coincide with the time when the victims of the massacre were to be found. Apparently, the teenager wanted to divert suspicion from himself. While the forensic scientists were working in the Browning's house, more and more teenagers came to the party. They were all shocked at the reason for the cancellation. Finally, Nicholas managed to talk. He confessed to killing his parents and younger brothers, but told a completely unbelievable story. When the boy came home from a sleepover with friends, he sneaked in and saw his father on the sofa asleep. He developed a violent anger at his father, Nick, who knew where the gun was. He took it and spent about half an hour thinking about what he should do. He dared to check whether the others had reacted, but apparently no one had heard the noise. Everyone was asleep, but the teenager did not leave it at that. Murderer then went to the first floor, shot his mother first, then entered his brother's room and shot them both. According to Nick's own statement, he got rid of his brothers because they could have reported him to the police, because he had asked them the day before to leave the doors open, which could have spoken against him as it would indicate an intentional killing. He stressed, however, that he killed his family with a single shot to the head because he did not want them to make them suffer. Nicholas showed the police where he had hidden the weapon. The murder weapon was found in a bush on the property. Ballistic tests showed that it was the weapon which killed the family, and the barrel contained DNA samples from the suspect. Finally, the juvenile offender was formally charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder. For many, the image of the boy was so positive that there were repeated letters to the court asking for mitigating circumstances. One of them was from Nicholas's grandfather, who claimed that the teenager had been put under physical and mental pressure by his father for years. Some could not believe that Nick would do such a thing. While waiting for the trial, just 2 days before it began, Nick was in custody and had a telephone conversation with his friend. Of course, the conversation was taped. During the conversation, the teenager joked about his escape. He never seemed to show remorse or realize the extent of his guilt. At the hearing, however, the situation changed dramatically. At one point, Nicholas burst into tears and turned to his relatives in tears to tell them he was very sorry. This contrast was used by the prosecution to show the jury the duplicity of the perpetrator. The defense played it differently and tried to show that such a positive young man simply could not be a cold-blooded murderer. Ryan said the abuse did not explain why Nicholas opened fire. He knew his friend as an upright guy who kept a cool head despite the constant pressure and punishment from his father. Also, it did not explain why he would kill his mother and his younger brothers. The buddy, according to the evidence, believed the real motive could have been money, as the family was wealthy and the parents were insured. A fake robbery would have given him the opportunity to receive a large inheritance through his parents' insurance. The teenager claimed to have been abused not only by his father, but also by his mother. He claimed that not only John had put pressure on him, but his mother had deliberately morally oppressed him. The mother's cruelty was not believed by anyone. The Brownings were decent, respectable people. No one who knew the family ever noticed any sign of beatings on Nicholas or of moral pressure from his parents. Close friends of the family knew that the teenager had recently been out of control and his behavior was becoming increasingly violent and unpredictable, which both parents claimed about. His weak attempt to plead insanity was immediately rejected. In a meeting with investigators, the teenager showed no psychological abnormalities. He had no mental problems at an earlier age, no disorders, and no thoughts of giving up his life. At the same time, his lawyer insisted that Nick be placed in a psychiatric facility with a rehab program. The juvenile offender should be placed in a home. The defense attorney was of the opinion that none of the teenager's motives sounded convincing. Even if there was money involved, he couldn't get it until he was of legal age. Furthermore, in that case, Nicholas would end up in a children's home or a foster family. Obviously, he didn't realize that the situation in this case could have been even worse for him than for the teenager he had described in his report on domestic violence in the family. However, a psychiatric report found that the teenager was of sound mind. In court, the attorney could not now claim mental impairment since such crimes are punishable by death under state law. No life was at stake. He was too young to receive the death penalty, and in January 2009, Nicholas agreed to a deal with the prosecution. The 16-year-old murderer pleaded guilty to all charges. The court sentenced Nick to 4 life sentences, 2 of which are to be served consecutively. However, due to his young age and the agreement, he can be released on parole after 23 years in prison in 2031. The most important condition for parole is good behavior. Before we leave tonight's episode, I want to hear your thoughts on this case in the comments section below. Do you think he was really getting abused by his family, or was that all just BS? And of course, give us a thumbs up if you like our video. Hit that subscribe button down below. And of course, we also got to shout out our sponsor of the episode, and that is the Original Monthly Beer Club. Are you a craft beer enthusiast or just looking to explore the world of unique brews? And let me introduce you to the Original Monthly Beer Club, the ultimate way to discover new and exciting beers every month. With the Original Monthly Beer Club, you'll receive a hand-picked selection of 4 craft beers from award-winning microbreweries across the country. Each shipment is curated by experts, ensuring you get a variety of styles, flavors, and brews that you won't find at your local store. From hoppy IPAs to smooth stouts, there's something to satisfy every palate. Every box comes with detailing tasting notes, food pairing suggestions, and insights into the breweries behind the beers. It's like a guided tour through the world of craft beer, all from the comfort of your home. So whether you're a seasoned beer lover or just starting to expand your taste, the Original Monthly Beer Club makes discovering new brews easy and exciting. Don't miss out. Join today and raise your glass to adventure. Use the link in the description. Check them out today. And of course, if you want to support the channel in other ways, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring new hosts, pay them, and hopefully one day take this show on the road. And as always, your support is very much appreciated. Of course, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll catch you next time.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
You have been listening to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Facebook at True Crime Never Sleeps podcast and on Twitter at True Crime NS. And follow us on Instagram at True Crime Never Sleeps. Thanks for watching. If you want to support the show, buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS or become a patron at patreon.com/truecrimeneversleeps.